Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Live on history.fm and liveparanormal.com radio, this is Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal with Dr. John. This is John DeSalvo, your guide for the next 60 minutes, and I want to thank you for being with us tonight. Are there really pyramids on Mars which were built by an alien civilization? Is there a common purpose for all the pyramids on Earth, from Giza to Central America? Is there information in the pyramids that can tell us about our future? We'll be discussing these questions and many more with our special guests, Dr. J.J. Hertek and his wife, Dr. Desiree Hertek. Doctors J.J. and Desiree Hertek are social scientists and specialists in remote sensing. They are founders of the Academy for Future Science, and Dr. J.J. Hertek is author of 20 books, but is most renowned for his book entitled The Keys of Enoch, which has always been one of my favorite. He has two PhDs, one from the University of California and the other from the University of Minnesota. He was a former professor at the State University of California, and in 1973, Dr. J.J. Hertek was the first to discover and publish visual documentation of the pyramids on Mars, and we'll be talking to him about that. Dr. Desiree Hertek was a former adjunct professor at the State University of New York, and she is a member of the United Nations Committee on Spiritual Values and Global Concerns. Both doctors, Desiree and JJ, have conducted research in Egypt and been instrumental in the discovery of the well-known tomb of Osiris, which was 30 meters beneath the surface of the Giza Plateau. Currently, they are involved in studying the acoustical sounds produced in the Great Pyramid and the temples of the Mayan culture. The Herteks have come to believe that many of the Earth's pyramids are computer-like calendars, revealing not only our future, but our origin. Now, they have just come back from Japan and will update us on the nuclear meltdown and tell us what the press and governments are not revealing to us. Well, I'd like to welcome my very, very good friends and research colleagues, JJ and Desiree, to the program. Hello, JJ and Desiree. How are you doing tonight?
Great, John. It's good to be here to connect with your world audience, and congratulations on bringing out this unique interplay between the paranormal, the paraphysical, and what I call the realm of the higher consciousness domain.
Yeah, obviously a lot of people are wondering what's going on the planet, and I think we're offering some of the answers to some of this when people go back and realize that with the pyramids and with the information coming forth now, we've been around for a long time, and we're going to continue that way for a while.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I tell you, it's such a pleasure and a joy to have you both on together. We have been friends. I mean, not just friends, but very good friends. I always refer to you as some of my closest friends for many, many years. And I have the highest respect for both of you. And I remember the first time I heard both of you on Coast to Coast, I almost had a mystical experience and ran out and got JJ's book, The Keys of Enoch. And we got in contact with each other. And since then, it's been just a fantastic friendship. And I thank you both for that.
Thank you very much. We're always here to serve. We bring together a blueprint of what I consider a higher evolutionary perspective, connecting the dots of where we have come from, why we're here, and where we're going in the immediate future, which I believe is a quantum change. And with the information revolution on all sides of the planet beaming down on us, even from the satellites, I think we're at a moment of graduation from schoolhouse Mother Earth.
Yeah, it does seem like that, doesn't it? It seems like no matter what culture, whether it's Mayan, Native American, psychic, mystical, religious, everyone is feeling the tension or the change in the air. But, you know, I one thing I'm real excited about is that I know you both were recently in Japan, and you kind of know the inside story of what's happening regarding the nuclear meltdown, and the press really is not telling us or giving us the true picture. I was wondering maybe you can comment on that and kind of tell us what really is happening over there.
Well, there's an official data that came out. It's called from MEXT, next, and that's the Japanese data coming out from the government. But then there's others who have done the readings of areas around the Fukushima plant and also areas around Tokyo, which, as you know, is not that far away. And these readings are much higher. And it's very sad because they're finding cesium, which comes from, you know, this nuclear meltdown, cesium-137, in the urine of children. The local people from Fukushima actually paid or helped a French nonprofit come over and do tests on the children. And they did just tests on 10 children. All 10 had the cesium-137, which has a very long half-life. So this is kind of a sad situation.
And as of today, August 26th, the Prime Minister of Japan, Mr. Kan, stepped down, which was a sign of what we felt was going to happen way back when we were there in June looking with the scientific community at some of the discrepancies in what was officially released as the radiation levels and what later proved to be something that was off, way off by several magnitudes. I think our audience may recall in CNN when Dr. Sanjay Gupta was in Japan, he was showing the radiation levels with the handheld oscillator, and the following night he got on CNN and he said they were off by 1,000 times. He was obviously very disturbed by the fact that official information was on a sigma level so far off the caliber of what was taking place, which indicates, in our opinion, a systematic misrepresentation, a systematic mixing of information to the point that the general public was confounded as to how far they had to be away from ground zero.
Well, why do you think they're doing this? Are they embarrassed? They don't want international help? Why wouldn't they be frank and just let everyone know how bad it is to get, you know, international support?
Well, actually, the U.S. government and the Australian government both told the government of Japan to move their people much farther. You know, they have this closure area of 30 kilometers, and if they've evacuated people, they've actually paid for the evacuation. And the problem with nuclear things like this is that you don't see an immediate death. I mean, cesium-137 has a 30-year half-life. That means about 60 years it'll take to get out of the system completely. But, you know, people aren't dying today. They're going to be dying in the next 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from cancers. And so the immediate paranoia is not present, and I think that's the main thing that people really need to realize. We had a friend that actually was in Hiroshima, and he lived to about 45, 50 and then died of cancer. So it just cuts short these young people's lives, and I think that's the main thing that people have to be concerned about. But, you know, this is something that the governments per se aren't really able to put the money into. They've had such a tragedy there in the whole north of Japan.
If you look at the demographics, you would have to move about one-sixth of the population, and that's not possible. And so rather than go into hysteria, the government felt, I think, to take the lesser of the two evils to come out with a mixed calibration, a level that would be constantly change up for grabs. To give you an illustration of what was happening there, the Morgan Stanley building that was built at a cost of over $3 billion U.S. dollars was standing empty. The streets were practically empty. Everybody was using the underground. And Desiree and I acknowledged that even those that were exposed had to wear face masks. Otherwise, there was a burning sensation, and I think, Desiree, you could describe the two different types of realities.
Right. I mean, most people are concerned about just the radiation that they're getting, like you would get an X-ray, but there's also what is known as hot particles. These are literally 2-micron particles that are floating in the air, and that's why people should wear masks, because if you get that in your system, it's not only the exposure to the radiation at that moment, but it's actually something that stays in your system for the years to come. And many people don't even feel this and yet inhale it. So it's a very dangerous thing. In fact, one of the interesting things that just came out, they showed a small rabbit or a bunny rabbit that doesn't have ears. Now, we know rabbits produce very quickly, and so, you know, they would be more noticeable in terms of having these genetic defects that will probably also come from this.
Picture is one of Japan as a barometer for the industrial north of the world to re-examine where they place their nuclear sites, to look at energy alternatives, which the Japanese are very adept at, and we were very happy to work with those engineers behind the scenes who were looking at other energy directions. So the warning bell has been sounded, and I think we as a planetary humanity must recognize that if we are to draw some immediate conclusions, is we have to change our environmental design, the way that we adapt ourselves to rapid change and look at extraordinary events that will happen across the board that will be earth-shaking on some levels, requiring us to have a positive consciousness and psychology if we're going to make it through the environmental changes.
And that's the positive thing that's coming out from this. We were just about to spend billions and billions of dollars here in the U.S. on nuclear. They were also being able to start spending more and more money in the Eurozone for nuclear, and when this happened, this has all changed. So now it's a real push, which we feel very positive about, to move to renewable technologies, new hydrogen technologies. Toyota and Ford are coming out with new ideas. There was a waste plant that took waste, literally, in California and moved it into hydrogen energy. I mean, these are tremendous things that can be done if people would just put the economics and focus to these new renewable technologies.
Sure. Well, you know, I appreciate you kind of updating us on this and kind of giving us a true picture. It's sad, but, you know, keep us updated, and if you have any new information, let me know, and we'll get you on for the update. But, you know, I'd like to move on to what you guys are really well known for, because, we only do have 1 hour. I could talk to you, obviously, for a 10-hour program. But, again, JJ is, I guess, is most famous for his book, besides Discovering the Pyramids on Mars, which we want to touch on, for writing the book The Keys of Enoch. And as I mentioned, that had an incredible spiritual effect on me. And I was wondering, JJ, maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you came to write it and the revelations you received regarding the book.
Well, the book is a paraphysical textbook. It came as a result of a remarkable experience where I was using ancient mantric terms, sacred expressions, and the effect of this energy charge that I evoked, that was part linguistic, part musical, created a morphogenic door through which I momentarily stepped and was met by beings who I consider those who were not extraterrestrial, but rather ultra-terrestrial in the evolutionary scheme of things, who showed me mental scenarios or mental pictures of things that were going to come to pass, one of which was a map of the world that was divided into meridians or longitudinal coordinates, and one was off of Japan where ancient pyramids would be found beneath the surface of the ocean. And that brings me back to Japan, where I was there some years ago and continuing to work with Japanese scientists like Dr. Kimura, who in 1996 with a group and a team went down off the island of what is called Yonaguni, which was part of the southernmost part of the Japanese island cluster, and confirmed the fact that there were these large standing pyramidal temples. And this caused a sensation in Japan. Most of the story was somewhat dismissed in the West is not being accurate, but further research by Australian, Japanese, and even American scientists that I was working with in the 1990s has confirmed in at least 6 different locations that there are these massive underwater pyramids that sunk as a result of cataclysmic changes that happened some 10,000 years before present. So it indicates why the Japanese story of creation is so important. The temples have what we found to be a turtle veneer or top that was engineered while they were above water. The sunken geometries, the sunken pyramidal temples, all indicate a much earlier story of creation, which I think is very relevant now as Japan goes through its own cycle of trying to find its identity on a new level of science.
And what's really interesting as well is that when you, these are underwater that were recently found, these were probably got underwater about 10,000 years ago, but if you look at Shuri Castle, which is another monument close by in the area of Okinawa, you find stone structures like you find in Peru, where they're so perfectly cut that you don't need mortar to hold the blocks together. So this is an advanced architecture that probably came from some sort of advanced knowledge, almost what you get in the area of the Great Pyramid.
Now, what have geologists said about this? I thought a lot of them have kind of thought it was just natural formations and we're reading too much into it. Have you had any, like, what is this? Are these the pyramids that Robert Schock had studied also?
Well, yeah. Dr. Hertek was there with Schock, and they were looking at this. But the thing is, it's not just that one monument. That's the thing, is if you are an underwater diver, you actually find an entire kind of wall area. You find another place called the platform. And these have small little curb stones on them. So if you just look at the one thing in a picture on the internet, you're not going to get the full-fledged situation of what's really under the water. There's many temples all around. This is the area really closer to Taiwan. In fact, there's been found temples underwater on both sides of Taiwan, one towards the Yanaguni side and one towards the west side of Taiwan. So this whole area, they believe at one time that the islands of Japan were not islands, that they were actually connected with the mainland of China, and that maybe the whole idea of Mu or Lemuria was the time when there was the sinking that took place.
After the land bridges were broken by the rising of the ocean, that took place at the end of the last ice age. So those who are interested, we have a film report that's quite extensive available through our Academy for Future Science. It is called The Temple of Mu, and if people are interested in going to the Academy of Future Science or the keysofenoch.org, they can order this documentary. Now, we had people from the Scripps Institute. We had Dr. Stephen Oppenheimer from the University of Oxford. We had leading scholars from Japan and Australia. So we have to look at events that took place since Schock and I were there the first time, which means there's more of the supporting body of information showing that all of these different locations, not simply Yonaguni, showing turtle shell veneers, which had to be engineered by human terraforming or shaping of the actual topology, suggest a much larger extensive geometric movement of civilization and a much earlier cycle of evolution that was working with land-ocean systems of navigation.
Wow. You know, if listeners wanted to go to your websites or find your books, if they just go to our radio archive page at drjohnradio.com, that's drjohnradio.com. Under Dr. JJ and Desiree's names is the links to their books and their three websites, and also we have, you know, you can download the MP3s of past programs for free and see our upcoming guests. So make sure you you check out their websites and their books. They're really wonderful authors. You know, I wanted to get back to the Keys of Enoch. You mentioned those beings, those entities. Are they like interdimensional creature beings or time travelers, or, you know, where are they from?
Some parapsychologists would refer to them as interdimensional and entities. Others would refer to them as angelic. Still others would refer to them as time travelers. You know, all of the above would fit, you know, depending upon the categories of contact. In my case, this was something that was quite paraphysical in the sense that I was allowed the opportunity to briefly see into the future, to be physically biolocated into a different dimension, and then spiritually taken from that biolocation level to even a higher level of an intense light experience, and physically brought back into a time, place where my students saw light radiations around my body, and this was filmed, this was measured, and privately investigated by government sources, although it was not something that people wanted to talk about because it was too overwhelming, but it was a genuine mystical experience in my terminology.
And, you know, the summation of the information, of course, is in the Book of Knowledge, Keys of Enoch, but in general, he was shown things from the past, the present, and the future, because Dr. Tuck was told that we are in a program that's speeding us up so we can have more understanding or a better understanding of what's going to take place on this planet, of how we're going to reconnect with our brothers and sisters of space. And we have to have the knowledge both historically, archaeologically, in terms of also genetically, astrophysically, of how we interact in the greater world around us, in the greater universe. And so really, we're being speeded up with this knowledge that's coming through the internet, through programs like yours, to awaken all of humanity to be able to be prepared.
Now, did you, are these like string theory dimensions, that with dimensions within our kind of world, but or are they kind of spiritual dimensions that maybe go up in space or just have a kind of an independent existence? It's hard to phrase the questions, but is there any kind of location you can identify these realms?
Well, we're familiar with Dr. Schwartz at Caltech, who was one of the thinkers behind string theory. But we're talking more of spiritual dimensions rather than those enumerated by those in string theory.
But if you look at, like, M theory, I know this is something you started talking about, M for M brains, that there's these different brains or areas and spaces and realities that can where other people can inhabit. I mean, I call them people, but they're really light beings, other vibrational entities. And so we believe that these are all interconnected. They can come and go into our space and time at any point that they so choose, because they're able to know how to manipulate space and time as we know, but they don't have to exist here or in any one space or time.
So there's a simultaneity where they can be in several dimensions at the same time. They're so advanced in terms of their evolutionary intelligence, they don't have to climb up a ladder from the third dimension to the fourth to the fifth to the sixth in terms of an arbitrary scale of values or measurements as we would think of it in Western scientific civilization.
Interesting. Now, you know, I think you mentioned, too, and when you had this metaphysical revelation, you physically disappeared for like a week or something?
It was 2 days. Again, it was an overwhelming experience. And again, for the audience who are listening to this, this experience happened several times. And I have a picture that should be on somebody's website of what happened when I was in Yucatan measuring the pyramids in the year 2000. Again, I was using ancient Hebrew Aramaic sacred expressions, and as I began to chant in that locale of Tulum, all of a sudden a light burst occurred around my body, and you can actually see this in full detail, with even the translator behind my shoulder being jarred by the enormity and the scope of the light burst.
But, you know, well, people can get very judgmental about, you know, what was his experience. I think the most important thing that we always like to focus on is what was the information.
Exactly.
And one of the key things, if we're talking about pyramids, was he was the first to say, from what he saw, that the Great Pyramid has two star shafts, what he calls star shafts. Some people call them air shafts. And one points to Orion, and the other points to the Draconis area of the universe. And what was interesting is he explained why, because this is showing the positive area of programming from Orion. And what's really interesting is that only recently in the last 10, 15 years, and of course the keys came out in the 1970s, has it been understood that the Mayans had the same cosmology, that they looked to Orion through certain stars in Orion as being the source of creation, or the energy that brought about creation on this side and this planet. And they looked towards the area of Ursa Minor and the Draconis and Ursa Major as being some of the areas of limitation, of the haughtiness of mankind. So it's the same cosmology whether you look at the Great Pyramid in Egypt or those in the Mayans. This is some of the research that we've been involved in.
You know, it's amazing. You know, I got to say, JJ, you've made so many wonderful discoveries, and many times you've never got the credit. Other people have gotten the credit, and it's I know you're a humble
person. Well,
this
was at least 20 years before Robert Duvall and Adrian Gilbert published their book, The Mysteries of Orion. Adrian Gilbert gave me credit. He's a good colleague of mine, and others just forgot about this because of what I call the meta language, which is part scientific and part spiritual. Now, the reason the keys of Enoch are in the flavors of consciousness symbolism or spiritual language and in the mathematics of scientific language is that both sides of the brain work in different levels of language, and the keys of Enoch are given as a blueprint to coordinate both sides of the brain. We would say the masculine and the feminine. This has been the problem with science and religion in the West. We've made false gods and false realities out of dualism, and consequently we play one part of the psyche or the mind off the other part of the psyche or the soul. And as a consequence, humanity has been at an interdimensional war with itself. Now has come the time of resolution, the time of consciousness synthesis, the time of advancement through new energy systems and future science, which is science guided by consciousness, not simply by numbers.
Well, I know your discovery, too. You were very helpful. My first book that I published, Decoding the Pyramids, which Barnes & Noble's published, and we put that information. Also, you contributed to that book about your discovery of the pyramids on Mars. And you are the first to discover and visually document the pyramids on Mars. Maybe we could just jump into that for a little bit. Again, there's so much to talk to you about. I don't want to miss the important topics and what you're noted for, but could you explain your discovery of the pyramids on Mars?
Well, in my consciousness experience that was behind the writing of the Keys of Enoch, I was shown mentally through mental pictures that there were pyramids on our sister planets, one of which is Mars, and I was shown in this mental scenario that these were three-sided, four-sided, and the five-sided pyramids, and they were specifically spelled out. One was in the region of what we call now the Elysian Quadrangle. I gave this information to colleagues at NASA who were part of the Mariner 9 and the Viking missions to the surface of Mars, and because of what was considered to be more in the realm of remote viewing rather than in paranormal science, I was acknowledged as being at the forefront of having these exact details, which were confirmed by the Mariner 9 mission, which then I got permission to publish in the Keys of Enoch. To my knowledge, is the first book throughout the world in 1973 that gives not only the details, but also the mathematical numbers, such as the B-frames, DAS-0779-4853, for example, shows two major and two minor tetrahedral pyramidal formations in the Elysian Quadrangle.
Right. Also, Carl Sagan later put this out in his book, and so they're kind of known for the Sagan pyramids. And this, I have to say to your audience, these are different from the area of Cydonia. This is the area of Elysium, which is another part of Mars. The Cydonia is the one that has the face and some pyramids around it, and some people have been very, critical of the face form. But the pyramids of Elysium that Dr. Tech showed in his book are really three-sided, so they're unique. They actually are quite large. They're about 700 times larger than the Great Pyramid. And so these are really quite fantastic. They're probably somewhat terraformed, and this is interesting because we can talk about pyramids. I'd like to bring in later on the Bosnian pyramid. I don't know if you've heard about that, John.
Oh, yeah. I think I have a section of that in one of my books, yes.
Yeah. So
I wanted to ask you about the pyramids. Do you think they're 700 times larger than the Giza pyramids because there's less gravity on Mars, and whatever culture was building them was able to build them bigger and higher?
That would be a good argument, where there's an absence of gravity or for the intensive purposes of argument, very little gravity, things will grow to a much larger size. The history of the planet supports the fact that once upon a time Mars had an atmosphere like Mother Earth. There was snow covering the planet. There was a large oceanic bodies of water. And there were these strange pyramidal formations standing that were reaching above the sea level as determined by, shall we say, a back engineering of the topology of Mars. So it's an interesting argument, and I asked my colleagues that were connected with Viking 1 and Viking 2 to put the cameras on the Elysium Quadrangle during the flybys and the mission, and the request was denied at the time. This was not considered appropriate because it would, I think, shock the imagination even of the strict scientific community that we were meeting with other levels of intelligence that was using the same building blocks as the different cultures of Mother Earth.
But now you can even see it on Google Maps, because there's actually a Google map of Mars. And, you know, we've done so many flyovers now. And it's very clear. There are four, and you can see them very clearly, in almost a kind of quadrangle type of arrangement, 1, 2, 3, 4, like a triangle, and I should say a rectangle. And it's very, you can't deny that they have these shapes, and it's just kind of unique. They think even like in a wind tunnel, you wouldn't be able to get that kind of shape. So some people have done studies, like I said, Carl Sagan himself was very surprised about these particular formations.
I tried to publish this in scientific journals at the time, but they rejected this. I remember I was with Bruce Murray, who was president there at Caltech in the 70s, and the arguments were that these were simply the byproducts of regolithic mantle buildup of surface materials or fissures or other super wind-type events that would take place on Mars, overlooking the fact that there was a mathematical pattern between the Great Pyramids there and the small pyramids that were there. We know that Mother Nature, according to Jacques Monod, the French philosopher, does not repeat itself in repeatable mathematical patterns. But there on the surface of Mars, you see repeatable patterns and a mathematical relationship that's quite unique that deserves a second look. And so fortunately, the people in Australia, through the leading journalist there, did run a series of articles and film reports on my testimonies that I gave to various scientific communities. And again, for those of you who are interested hearing this program, order the Book of Knowledge, Keys of Enoch, and go to chapter or key 104, and there you'll see the official reports that I released to the world scientific community in 1973.
Okay, JJ, here's the million-dollar question. If these pyramids are not natural formations but were created by some intelligent being, were they alien beings with a genetic makeup completely different than us? Were these are we descendants from these? Was life first on Mars and then came to Earth, and then life on Mars became extinct? Who were these builders of these pyramids, if indeed they were made by an intelligence?
Again, this is a question that was asked by the Apostle Paul in the Book of Acts, if you read it carefully, to the great philosophers in Athens on Mars Hill, that the apostle refers to temples not made by human hands. Indirectly, he's referring to a greater source of intelligence behind the lesser planetary gods. But in the event that we will have more disclosures in the next few years, I believe this question will be answered, that at least there was some type of extrasolar intelligence, in my logic, that was able to swing by a series of planets in our solar system and experiment with life. And this is why there's great similarities between Earth and Mars, and the two planets may have shared a common biosphere at one time.
Right, and we've worked with the Zulu shaman Credo Mutwa in the 1980s, and he said, their legends say that we came from, or at least their people, the Zulus, came from Mars, and in something called the Maracaiba, and they did that because of the warlike nature that was taking place there. So their philosophy is that they did come from Mars and then came to Earth. And I think scientists nowadays are at least understanding that the basic building blocks of life are out there in space. And we personally believe, of course, that we're not just limited to Mars and Earth, that you'll find what we call the Adamic species throughout the universe. So there's other races in space as well. It's not just one race in space, of course. We believe that there's many races in space, but probably those on Mars had a similar, maybe not identical, but similar genetic code to what we have.
Yeah, you know, some of the people I know that were involved with abductions and people who supposedly worked with the government claimed it could be as many as 48 different alien species. But one thing I wanted to mention, because people are wondering, you mentioned too, Cydonia is where the face on Mars was discovered. Now, I'm no expert, but when I studied the NASA photographs, the pyramids really look like pyramids, the 3, 4, and 5 sided pyramids. They really look like they were made by an intelligence. But I really question the face on Mars. I tend to think it's probably just a natural formation, but what's your take on that?
Well, I have a book out in Spanish called El Sphinx en Marte, The Sphinx on Mars, where I show pictures and a variety of models, even in Latin America and in Japan. We have historic aspects of temples with faces pointed to the sky that could be taken as man's quest to see anthropological forms, in other spatial realities or heavenly realities. In other words, the human race throughout its history was mirroring on Earth what it is suspected to be in the sky, or what it experienced by direct associations in the sky through what the Aboriginal peoples called the sky people in their mythology. So we're at a crucial point of putting all of this data together, and what we're saying is the common element that connects all of these diverse myths and legends appears to be the pyramidal geometry, whether it's 3-sided, 4-sided, or 5-sided. We find all three on the surface of Mars, but we find in the various cultures, from the Canary Islands to the Zulus in East Africa to the Japanese and the Chinese people, a whole mythology, psychology, theology built around the pyramid as the central point of spiritual, sociological, and psychological organization. And if you look, as you know, with your scientific background in biology, at the structure of the body is based upon the carbon atom, which, if you look at it very carefully under magnification, is a type of structural pyramidal form.
Or you can say even the water itself, the water molecule H2O, forms itself a pyramid. So all these structures are kind of innate in all of nature. I mean, many people who come from a Christian tradition recognize the Trinity power. So these energies are there, and they point, and I think just create a dynamic, as you know, from the Russian pyramids that were more contemporarily built. They actually changed the entire environment. These people who built them, when they did the studies, there's less violence in the area. They less people in prison having, difficulties.
So the pyramid is the most basic geometric form for the changing of consciousness.
Sure. You know, listen, you mentioned the Russian pyramids, too, for your listeners. If they go to my GizaPyramid.com website, I was the spokesperson in the West for the Russian pyramid research and broke the research for the first time in my book and on radio. And it's just an amazing, amazing set of experiments with the Russian National Academy of Sciences and medical institutions, and it really ties it all together. You know, could we maybe get into your work with the sound testing and the Great Pyramid? You know, you're part of the Great Pyramid of Giza Research Association with me, and so is Paul Horn, who's an honorary advisory board member who recorded Inside the Great Pyramid, a two-time Grammy Award winner. And Paul is a very, very spiritual person, and this is a very interesting area, the acoustics and the spiritual, sounds of the Great Pyramid. Maybe you can touch upon that if you don't mind.
Certainly. In the glossary of the Keys of Enoch, pyramid is defined as a coded time structure. And we feel, on the basis of our research with pyramids in Japan, China, Egypt, and more recently in Yucatan, that there is a vibratory sound structure that comes out of certain chambers connected with these pyramids. They're not just happenstance arrangements by different tribes at war, but the original pattern seems to be laid out mathematically, astrophysically, and psychologically according to certain vibratory responses that happen when you go into the pyramid temple as a point or place of initiation or raising of consciousness. In my work with various key musicologist and scientist, we had the opportunity, with the permission of the government of Egypt, to bring in a very sophisticated transducers and software equipment and go and actually place the computers inside the various chambers and then run a variety of musical sweeps where we could look at the vibratory structures. And again, this information I've shared rather selectively because most of the classical Egyptian-minded authorities are not so happy that there may be a musical side to Egyptology. But to simplify the argument, we were able to show that under certain conditions, a certain type of energy response could be evoked by certain sound patterns. And when we work in specific areas of the king chamber, for example, in the great king's coffer or sepulchre, we were able to show that musical sound signals could basically work with the same tempo and rhythm as the human heart in terms of the cycles per minute. In other words, we showed that there were various musical vibratory resonance levels that could activate the human heart, that could control the temperature range of the body, that could bring out certain paraphysical states of consciousness. In so many works and words, we've demonstrated this in some of our publications for those who might be interested.
Right, so specifically when we were in the Great Pyramid, there are certain frequencies, especially the A-sharp and F-sharp ranges, that seem to resonate. And we've actually also done some musical compositions and stuff and done some prayers and meditations from the Great Pyramid. And you can feel these vibrations. And what we noted in our computer test that we did is that in addition, there's usually an overtone when you sing. And in this case, the overtone tends to go lower and lower and lower. So you have a greater amount of resonance in the lower end of the hertz frequencies. In fact, we were talking today, it goes actually so far down that you actually start resonating into the alpha and the theta waves of energy. So you can get into that state of meditation right inside the king's chamber because of the frequencies that resonate down in the lower end.
On the other hand, you can build up sound responses to the fact of actually seeing energy burst inside the ascending chamber or the king's chamber or the queen's chamber. We were able to capture on film tremendous light energy bursts when we reached a certain musical overtone response. And again, this is in one of our CDs entitled The Living Capstone. For those of you who might be interested listening to this program, that shows the actual picture of a light burst that completely filled the ascending chamber with golden light momentarily. We had a situation with Robert Watts, who was the online director of the Steven Spielberg Indiana Jones series, who was there, and he saw the light changes, and it changed his life completely. He dropped out of the motion picture industry and has been on a spiritual quest ever since. So the Great Pyramids are a type of musical transducer mechanism through which sociologists, psychologists, culture historians of all ages could step in and out of, evoking higher states of or altered states of creative consciousness.
And just to add that, we went there with a musicologist, a friend of ours, Alan Howarth, who now came out with something called raw music. And he felt, most people know if they've studied music, that A is usually 440 cycles per second. This is something that's man-made. He found from studying the Great Pyramid with us and also the pyramids of the Mayan culture that the A should really be 424 cycles per second. And that actually, if you can tune to that vibration, you can actually start getting into the better harmonics of musical nature within
ourselves.
You know,
I was going to ask you, Desiree, the slow frequency, I know alpha wave frequency is 8 to 12 cycles per second. I know when I taught biofeedback, that was the brain wave we wanted to try to induce. But do you think these low frequencies in the Great Pyramid are related to the Schumann frequency that supposedly the Earth resonates with a frequency of about 7.8 cycles per second? Because that's so close to the alpha range. Or is that related to this? Are they causing these waves in the pyramid, or are they two completely different things?
No, I definitely think that the Great Pyramid builders, the first question someone asks is, well, did they build the Great Pyramid for the music, Or is it because of the dynamic between the red granite, the geometry, the height, the length, the depth, all that, that creates this? And it's really more when you get into what we would call the sacred geometry that you get into the sacred vibration. And I think this goes back even to the whole idea of string theory and vibration, that all life is vibration, and they understood how geometry and vibration comes together. And so, yes, the idea of the Schumann resonance and alpha brainwaves would be able to tie in together. Now, interesting with the Schumann resonance is it's not only in the 7.8, which most people talk about, and it also changes its frequency a little bit, but even the Schumann resonance, they know that it also is augmented into towards the 14 hertz, and it goes up in these harmonic ranges. So it's not just the 7.8 that many people talk about. It actually ranges up into the 14 and then even into the 28. These are how harmonics work. So it does work like sound.
Yeah, I think it's like 14.3, 20, 27, 33. So you're right, there are harmonics and fundamental frequencies that I just think this is so fascinating because, I mean, there are a lot of theories on what produces it, but I also have a theory. I think this frequency is increasing because it's moving towards the alpha range as kind of a global change in consciousness. But that's just my theory. I guess it's going to take decades or maybe centuries to see if that's true. You know, before we run out of time, I think we have about 6 or 7 minutes. I want to touch upon your new book, The Over Self Awakening. And every book either one of you has published has been a tremendous hit, a bestseller. And maybe you could tell us about, I have no idea about this new book. So if you can tell me and the audience about it, love to hear about what it is entitled.
Yes, this book will be available in October. It's a book that is illustrated showing that there is a type of self-programming or meta-programming that we take as we increase our self-realization and realize these sacred geometries and musical patterns are at work within every cell of our body, within every resonance pathway of our body. We are the temple of sound. We are the temple of the Holy Spirit. As we begin to put together the spiritual and the scientific side, we begin to synthesize and to create within ourselves higher levels of musical appreciation that reach out. Ultimately, our body becomes a musical antenna, a musical transducer, pulling in sounds of the universe. The universe is full of these fantastic melodies and sounds, what the Greeks call the music of the spheres. This was not simply limited to the Chinese poets or the Beatles, but it's music on the frontier for all of us to experience, and this is why pyramids are the gateways to the many worlds of experience. But it's not simply the external structure, it is also the internal structure of having a vibratory geometry, a vibratory pathway come alive. And this book, Awakening of the Overself, is that methodology that shows you by pictures, not simply by words, but by pictures or cosmograms, how to think and process information multidimensionally.
Right, and we also take you, it has actually 72 chapters, actually stages of evolution, we would call it, or growth. And it takes you also through the pyramids, everything from Edna, which has a vibratory frequency as well, to places like Tikal. And this is one, Tikal is one of the most unique places on sound.
In Guatemala.
If you stand up on top of this huge pyramid, I could just be talking normally and you would hear me at the base. It's an amazing thing. So
wow.
they knew these, they had the complete understanding of how sound would resonate.
So this is the lost language of sound, the lost language of mathematics, the lost language of cosmology that the keys represent, and gives basically all of the key coordinates, not only for the genetic code as the God code, but also the musical codes, the architectural codes, the mathematical codes, and ultimately the overall codes of unity that we must have as a planetary species if we are going to understand the cycles of Japan through all the cataclysmic changes, the cycles of Africa, the cycles of a world that is now going through a big question mark of whether it's going to work with nature or against nature, whether it's going to work in the concert of parallel evolution and the reality of a higher thinking intelligence in the universe that we are part of, or simply see itself isolated, depressed, alone, ostracized, and certainly incapable of raising its own consciousness through a type of inner music symphony that we have available to us at each moment of the day of prayer and praise.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that book. You know, we got about 2 minutes left. Where are you off to next? You guys are world travelers. think there's very few places you haven't been. Where are you going to next, and what are you
going
to study?
Well, we're going down to Mexico, but we want to mention to other people that, in terms of Mexico, that we don't think that 2012 is the end of the world, and so we're inviting people, and we will. It's a public conference for December 22nd and 23rd in Cancun for 2012. So that's a year, a little over a year from now. But we hope that if people want to go down there, want to celebrate December 21st, 2012, then they'll join us on the 22nd and 23rd.
So this is planetary renewal. Is this the feminine side of Quetzalcoatl, the feminine side of all of the traditions that have been overlooked as we reseat ourselves, as we resituate ourselves, as we regenerate ourselves with the fantastic music of the peoples of Yucatan, the peoples of Brazil, the peoples of Africa and throughout the world who are looking through a higher consciousness cosmology, real change, quantum change, and not the death of the world that's being preached, practiced by the electronic seance of the end of time. So this is a major step that people out there in the audience that is listening to this program, worldwide, that are listening to this program, I should say, should pick up on and use in terms of their own mission statements.
And we also have a conference, if I can say, it's called Expanding Reality Going Beyond 2012, this November in Tempe, and this is a conference put up by our friend Chet Snow. It'll have Raymond Moody, it'll have William Henry, Daniel Pinchbeck, and Flor de Mayo, to name a few people. So we invite people, of course, November 18th to the 21st in Tempe, Arizona, if they want to join us.
Well, you know, listen, we're running out of time here, and I just have to tell you, I can't thank you both enough for coming on tonight and being my special guest. And we obviously got to have you back on again, because you just got so much to share with us. And by the way, next week, you may want to make sure you listen, JJ. I know you were very interested in the Kennedy assassination and different conspiracies. I'm going to be having on as a guest next week one of the only 20 living Secret Service agents who was with JFK in Dallas when he was shot, and he's got some really incredible stories. He's mentioned in the new book on the Kennedy, called The Kennedy Detail, about the Secret Service men break their silence. So I'm sure you want to listen to that.
Well,
also,
I think people should go to our website, futurescience.org, keysofenoch.org, healtheplanet.org. We must go beyond assassination into a reaffirmation of who we really are, that we are all leaders in this wonderful ascension process. This is a whole new chapter of life that's being opened to us, and we must go beyond dualism to realize that we collectively, pluralistically, and in unity are the answer to the problems of the past. This is the emergence of a new reality, a higher I am that I am appearing before all of us in the next generation. Let us take and let us be joyous in the next quantum change we're going
sure.
to be prepared for.
Well, you know, again, listeners can go to drjohnradio.com. That's drjohnradio.com. And I have links to all of Dr. Hertek's sites. And again, JJ and Desiree, thank you so much for being my special guest tonight. And I'd like to thank LiveParanormal.com Radio for hosting this program. Also, the owner, Rob Zierek, again, for sponsoring this. Carla at the Master Control. And ClassicalIndia.com for permission to use their music. But most especially, you, the listeners, for joining us tonight. And I hope you join us again next week for another special guest. And again, you can check out our listing of our upcoming programs and download programs of past guests at www.drjohnradio.com. And until next week, good night, and may God be with you.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interactive Media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.